Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Sinister Sightings 278. All right, y'all, we're jumping right in. The first one. White t-shirt over my side of the bed. Hey, ladies, it's Regina. This makes, I think, my third story to send in to y'all for Sinister Sightings. I found your podcast maybe 2 months ago and have been binge listening. I started from the most recent and am working my way backwards. When I was probably about 22, we lived in the country in the middle of nowhere, in a trailer house in front of a 6-acre pond. I woke up one morning, probably about 6 o'clock, and looked over on my side of the bed, and I swear I saw a white t-shirt on my side of the bed just hovering. It wasn't swaying in the breeze. It was just there. I blinked so many times just to make sure there wasn't something in my eyes. I kept thinking, this isn't real. This isn't real. This isn't real, but I swear it was. Finally, after I blinked, probably the 100th time, it just disappeared. I have no idea what it was. Maybe my guardian angel? So the next day, I went into my room and said, okay, if you're my guardian angel, I'm cool with that, but just, I don't want to see you because you just scared me so bad. I lived there probably another 15 years and never saw it again. I was telling my mom about what I saw, and she reminded me that when I was about 12 years old, she saw a white shirt standing over my bed. Maybe it was my guardian angel? Who knows? What? Why a shirt?
I don't know.
And like very specifically, like a white shirt, like not like, oh, let me get like a little polo. Let me get a little button up. No, like a white t-shirt.
Yeah.
Not a tie-dye, nothing. I'm sure somebody in here listening has probably heard something about that.
I don't know, but I'm like, well, it was a ghost. You couldn't see him.
Oh my God. It's like Beetlejuice taking the sheets.
Yeah.
Well, not Beetlejuice, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All Beetlejuice.
But I don't know. But then like your mom saw it too at a different point. I don't know. But I don't think guardian angel because.
Like, why are they making themselves known in that way?
Yeah. And only then, not like.
When you're in need.
Yeah. Okay. The next one. Haunted house. Hi, ladies. I wrote in a few years ago about Burke and Hare, the Scottish body snatchers. In that time, I've had 3 babies, so I haven't had time to write anymore. However, I could not let this experience go by and not share it with you. Halloween of 2023. I went to an old house in Edinburgh called New Whaley's House. It's a beautiful house that was in the same family for 400 years and had been left to the Preservation Society. Everything in this house is old and original. Even the books are 200 years old. It's incredible, but of course, creepy. I was heavily pregnant at the time, and so on the tour through the house, I had to sit down in each room. There was only one chair in each room we were allowed to sit on, and of course, it was in the corner out of the way. They light the whole house with candles as none of the lights worked anymore, and as they were preserving it, they couldn't really put in new ones. So in the first room we went into, I sat down near the door, and the lady doing the tour was telling us about a time when the house got passed down to a woman who was never married, which was odd for the time that they were referring to. During this time, I just kept thinking I could see something running back and forth in the hall. I brushed it off thinking I was imagining it, and then I heard whispering. I thought someone was talking on the tour and started to get annoyed because I thought it was so rude to talk over the woman telling us the history. However, it turned out to be nobody was talking at all, and five of us in the group heard the whispers. During this time, I was still sure I could still see a small figure running around that looked to be about the size of a child. I interrupted the tour guide and told her what I kept seeing, and she froze and said, "I was just about to tell you the rest of the story about the woman who lived here. She had dwarfism, and she wrote to her friend saying her prospects for marriage looked bleak because of her short stature. This is the only way they assume that she had dwarfism, because the woman refused to have any paintings done of herself." We were all quite scared at this point and moved through the house and up the stairs to the bedroom. We went into one bedroom, and this feeling of overwhelming dread came over me as soon as I stepped in. I felt uneasy and as if someone was telling me that this wasn't where I should be. Like, I was nervous someone didn't want me in that room. So, of course, I sat on the chair again, and the tour guide started to explain that there had been many childbirths in that room, and the saddest one was of twins who didn't make it, and their mother shortly died after giving birth to them. In that moment, I felt like someone punched me under the seat and actually lifted me to my feet. Now, bear in mind, I was hugely pregnant, and the part I didn't mention, I was pregnant with my twin girls. I screamed so loud, and I ran out of the room terrified that something else was going to happen. I felt so sorry for the mother, but honestly, I felt like if it was her who hit the chair, she was angry that I was in her room with twins and she didn't get to have hers. It was such a scary but incredible house, and I'd like to go back now that my girlies are here so I could actually walk a bit more. I always listen to you while I drive my three girls, I have a toddler too, around in the car trying to get them to go to sleep. Keep on doing what you do, ladies. Lots of love, Emily from Scotland. P.S. I'm sending this at the beginning of April. Well, you're hugely pregnant and I'm just huge, so I sit in all the chairs.
I was thinking that. I was like, had to take a break. Me too.
I'd be like, damn it, she's pregnant. She gets a chair. Like, I'll just stand here.
Right.
Me and you lean against each other, pressing our backs to each other, right, trying to offset our weight. I mean, have we done that before? Absolutely.
Would I do it again? Today, if I needed to. So do you think that the presence that was like pushing you up was bad, or do you think it was something like, hey, just get out of this room because it kind of, you know, you're pregnant and it's got like a weird vibe, so just get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be either one of those, because if you're thinking like it punched you like so hard from the bottom that like it's punching you like where?
Up, literally up.
Yeah, but like also like in a place that could, I mean, not like on your stomach, but like could hurt something. But like Carrie said, it could be just like, hey, get up, because like you don't want to stay in this room any longer because of what's happened in here, the energy.
Yeah.
Whatever. And like, who knows, you know?
I mean, I could not have been listening well, because y'all know sometimes my listening ears aren't on. But like the way you described it in the message I got more, it was like, hey, you shouldn't be in here, not I'm angry that you're in here.
Yeah.
I did just watch a video. It was like, if you do these things, you probably have auditory processing difficulties. And I was like, I do that, I do that, I do that, I do that, I do that. Okay. So like, I mean, I knew it, but I really do think sometimes when with stuff like this, I'm like, I think I'm processing it and I don't actually. Well, before we get into the next story, we've got to talk about Babbel, because this episode is sponsored by Babbel.
Well, sometimes when Carrie's talking to me, it's like she's speaking a different language, and I really wish Babbel could make me fluent in Carrie.
You don't want to be up in this brain.
They might not have Carrie as a language, but they have over 14 other languages.
You know, it's summer, it's travel time, and maybe you're traveling abroad. Maybe you want to be able to read the menu without being confused of, what am I ordering? Or maybe you're like me and you have to stop and go to the bathroom every 5 seconds, so you need to be able to ask where it is. You don't have to waste hundreds of dollars on private tutors, because that's the old school way. We're in the new school way. This is the new way to learn a language.
Babbel's 10-minute lessons are quick. They're handcrafted by over 200 language experts, and you'll be able to speak your new language in 3 weeks.
And with Babbel, you really are speaking the language, because the app is super user-friendly. You can practice your enunciation of words, and it's conversational language learning. So it's not just like random words where you're not really understanding how to like string them together in sentences and that sort of thing.
It really is designed by real people for having real conversations. I know when I've done it, it is fun and it is nice that it allows you to answer questions without like knowing the answers, but like you can guess and kind of see where you are in the learning process.
And don't just take our word for it. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and beyond continue to prove that Babbel works. One study actually found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And let me just tell you, I learned more with Babbel than any class I ever took. And with over 16 million subscriptions sold, I mean, clearly, you're on the right track, Babbel. And we will be too when we start learning our other language. It's backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee, so there's no pressure. And right now, we've got a limited time special just for y'all. Head on over to babbel.com/creep to get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription.
Again, that is babbel.com/creep to get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription.
Rules and restrictions apply. babbel.com/creep.
Have Babbel, we'll travel.
Okay, the next one. My cousin Adam. Until we were 12, my cousin Adam lived right next door to me. For the first 7 years of my life, I was an only child, so Adam was like a brother to me. When his parents divorced, he moved about 30 minutes away, so I didn't see him very often anymore, just at Thanksgiving and Christmas. Before he moved away, we did everything together. After school, he would come over to my house until one of his parents got home from work. My mom would make us dinner, and we'd always have leftover biscuits outside and feed them to the ducks in the river behind our houses. We didn't know you weren't supposed to feed them bread. He knew that I wanted to pet one, so one day, after we'd gained their trust, he caught one and brought it to me so I could finally pet one. We would play Super Mario Bros. 3 all the time, and we almost missed the school bus many times because we got caught up in on it. Whoops. He would make me laugh like nobody else. He was my favorite person. Adam passed away during our 16th summer in a car accident. I don't remember exactly how I found out about his passing, but I do remember the overwhelming sadness. The casket was closed at the funeral, and it makes me upset because I couldn't remember the last time I'd seen him alive. It didn't seem real, and not being able to see him while saying my final goodbyes was just gut-wrenching. I tearily prayed to God to help me find some peace, but it seemed like that wasn't going to happen. A few weeks after his passing, I was going on a little shopping trip with my aunt, not his mom, and as we were driving down the road, I noticed a boy walking in the same direction that the car was going. He was carrying a fishing pole and was wearing a t-shirt, jeans, and a baseball cap. The strangest feeling came over me as we passed him. I had to see his face. So I turned to look. Nobody was there. There was absolutely nowhere he could have gone. Besides, the road was a mountain, and I doubt that anyone could climb a mountain that fast. I didn't say anything to my aunt, but I was really shaken up. A few days later, I asked my mom where Adam had died. When she told me, all of the color must have drained from my face because she asked what was wrong. It turns out that he died less than a quarter of a mile from where I saw that boy that day. What I didn't tell you was that Adam passed on his way home from a fishing trip with another cousin and some friends. He always wore a t-shirt, jeans, and a baseball cap, just like the boy I saw. I knew right then that my prayer had been answered, and after that, I felt peace about his passing and started to heal. Thank you for allowing me to tell this story. It makes me so happy to tell people about Adam. He was the very best friend ever. Creep it real, Cassie.
See, I feel like that's validation because she didn't say where she had seen the little boy or anything like
right.
that.
Didn't even mention it to the aunt. Like, did you see that kid?
Right.
Did he look to be the same age? Like, did he look like a 16-year-old or did he look like a kid, you know?
Yeah. I'm really sorry for y'all's loss, though.
I can see that, though. Like, I kind of felt like that with Donna's mom because I was in Tampa at school when she passed, and then she was cremated. So, like, I never got to see her to say goodbye. So, it almost felt like undone, you know? Like, there wasn't that, like, see her in the closure. So, I totally get that.
This bitch didn't even answer my calls when I was calling her.
Well, no, I didn't answer your texts.
Yeah.
Because I was studying for a test and had my phone on do not disturb. All this motherfucker had to do was call. And well, when she finally did, I was like, what?
I know. I was like, well, I was doing this while like,
yeah,
everything was going on. Like paramedics are trying to do this. But no, like, I mean, they really both were there. It was just like a joke.
Yeah, because I really did have my phone on Do Not Disturb because I was studying for a test like the next morning.
Yeah. Okay, the next one. Sinister sightings. Ouija board guardian angel? Oh, hey, it's Rachel Stiltskin emailing from Iowa. Please feel free to use my name. It's been a hot minute since I wrote in, so here I am. The last time I wrote in, it was a crazy long compilation of my true crime experiences. And I think I just built up writing my next story in my head so much that I had been putting it off. So today I made a list of about 18 stories to start writing separately to send in. I'll probably bundle some smaller ones that are related, but I'm hoping it's less overwhelming to my neurodivergent brain to chunk them like this and more digestible for everyone else. That being said, this is one of my longer and more complicated stories. Bizarrely, I've already written this story up at least 3 times before, including writing a transcript of a tape my grandpa recorded for posterity that I pulled excerpts from the last time I typed this up. At that time, I remember making a concerted effort to save it in both Notes and Google Drive so I'd have it forever. Additionally, I emailed it to a few people. You guys, I shit you not, not a single one of those copies is still in existence anywhere. It's gone. I cannot find it anywhere. So take that for what you will, I guess. I think someone or something doesn't want me telling the story. I did tell this story on Jim Harold's Campfire podcast about 5 years ago, so presumably that episode still exists, but I no longer have access to it. So here's hoping this email even comes through to read on the podcast, because this shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Thanks, Gwen Stefani. Side note, before I jump in, I love you guys. You've helped save my sanity during some of the craziest years of my life. Thank you for being real and funny and sassy and kind. Okay, so let's get into this story. Like my father and his father before him, I grew up in the sleepy town of Delta, Utah. While it was no booming metropolis in my day, i.e. one stoplight, limited shopping, and the high school principal and his buddies took guns onto the soccer field on the high school campus in the middle of town to do target practice and didn't really even get in trouble. It was even smaller when my grandpa Glenn was a teenager in the late 1910s and early 1920s. He and his older sister Isla were barely a year apart and attended their small school together. They lived on a farm and were devoutly religious. Their parents were farmers who had a total of 7 kids between the years of 1904 and 1915. Isla and Glenn were the oldest. My great-grandma Eliza was very faithful and spiritual, so when she heard there was going to be a spirit board, aka Ouija board, at the end of the year party for the kids in town, she told Isla and Glenn that they could not attend the party. I know these details because my grandpa got the tape recorder from one of my uncles who was in the military in the 1970s so they could send recordings back and forth. My grandpa Glenn also took that opportunity to record some stories for posterity. Well, my great aunt Isla really wanted to go to that party. She begged and begged her parents to allow it. She begged my grandpa Glenn to try to convince them to let them both go. My grandpa thought about it and talked to his mom. He found out she was worried about the kind of spirits that would come through the Ouija board. My grandpa was clear on the recording I listened to that he believed the boards had power and that the spirits that came through were not positive. He told my great-grandma Eliza something along the lines of, "I think you should allow us to go. Because of our faith, I believe the board won't work when we're near it." Finally, great-grandma Eliza relented and said that Grandpa Glenn and great-aunt Isla could go to the party, but they were to stay away from that spirit board. When they arrived at the party, Isla's friends were already using the board and waved her over to them. She immediately ran over to play. Side note, honestly, I've never felt more connected to an ancestor than my great-aunt Isla when I heard this story, because without this story, that would be 100% me. My grandpa Glenn avoided the board, but watched from a distance. As he observed, he noted that Isla's friends were getting more and more frustrated until he heard one of them say, "It was working just fine before you got here." Eventually, Isla left that area, and apparently the Ouija board worked again after she left. My grandpa Glenn was pretty smug in his telling of the story, which still cracks me up. And dear creepster, if that were where the story ended, it would be a spooky story, but nothing too mind-blowing. However, that is not where this story ends. In the summer of 2000, just before my junior year of high school, my oldest brother and our cousin transferred some of the old tapes my grandpa Glenn recorded onto CDs, and they distributed them to everyone in the family. I was enjoying summer, but also bored, so I popped the disc into my Discman and gave it a listen. This story gave me chills and also reaffirmed what my parents had always told me. Never touch or use a Ouija board. Once, when I was little, my mom caught me making my own Ouija board out of paper and trying to commune with the spirits. She was not pleased, and I got two earfuls about it. I never touched one since, but I will say I do have a deep fascination with them. My closest sibling in age is named Megan, and she's 5 years older than I am. During that summer, she was a forest fighter in the Kibab National Forest in Arizona near the Grand Canyon. I went to visit her and stay at the forest ranger cabins for a week or so. It was a week of doing whatever she wanted, listening to whatever she wanted, and trying to be cool to my older sister, who prior to that point rarely even wanted me in the same room as her. Finally, when she was taking me home at the end of the trip, she let me pick something for us to listen to. I had asked her if she listened to Grandpa Glenn's stories yet. She said no and that they made her tired when she was driving, which was fair. Grandpa Glenn had an incredibly soft and soothing voice. Megan seemed like she was going to shoot down the idea of listening to them, so I told her, just listen to one story. She agreed, and I played Isla and Glenn's Ouija board story for her. At some point during the story, she pulled the car over and just sat and listened. I thought it was a little extreme of a reaction, given that this girl would put a full face of makeup on, tweeze facial hair, style her ponytail, and every other dang thing while she was driving. But I was glad one of my older siblings was enjoying something that I had suggested, so I rolled with it. Tell me you're the youngest sibling without telling me you're the youngest sibling. When the story was over, I said, so crazy, huh? Megan was like, Rachel, has Troy ever told you his Ouija board story? Troy is our second oldest brother, and he's 8.5 years older than I am. No, what are you talking about? I asked her, totally clueless. Then Megan launched into the most unexpected story. Troy went to college a few hours away from our hometown. She told me that at one point he went to a house party that was pretty wild. In addition to the expected drinking, loud music, cooking up, etc., there was a group of people there using a Ouija board. Troy didn't heed a lot of the warnings our parents had given us in life, but there was one warning he had always heeded. Don't mess with Ouija boards. This was in the 90s, when my grandpa Glenn's recordings were still just sitting in a relative's basement. But our parents had made us sufficiently scared of Ouija boards without Grandpa Glenn's stories. Troy steered clear and hung out in a different area of the house. There was a girl at the party that he liked, and she was super interested in the Ouija board. Other people had tried to get Troy to use a Ouija board, and he just blew them off, until the girl he liked came and pulled him by the hand to come see the Ouija board. Troy went with her, but when he got close, it really just seemed like people were sitting there with their hands on the planchette and nothing was happening. He said it was lame and walked off, and everyone gasped as the planchette started moving again. The girl said, come back, Troy, it's working. He came back and nothing was happening. This happened a few times until someone standing nearby said, it's Troy, it stops working when Troy's over here. Someone sitting at the board then decided to ask the board this question. Why don't you work when Troy's over here? There was a pause, and then the planchette started moving, and it slowly spelled out G-L-E-N, Glenn. Troy's heart about fell out of his ass. Everyone stared at him and then started asking, who's Glenn? As he started backing away from the group, he didn't know the people at the table. None of them had known our grandpa's name. This was in the 90s, hours away from our hometown with strangers. The kicker, Troy's middle name is Glenn, but most people there didn't even know his last name, let alone his middle name. We have always thought that Grandpa Glenn was Troy's guardian angel after Grandpa died in 1984, shortly after I was born. Troy survived a lot of crazy things before Grandpa Glenn passed away, but he has survived even crazier things since then, including, but not limited to, a broken neck and collapsed lung from a car wreck where he coded 3 times during life flight, an apartment fire where he escaped by pulling himself out of a skylight with hunting ammo exploding all around him, despite being a walking quadriplegic from breaking his neck, being married to someone with paranoid schizophrenia twice, a bowel hemorrhage that required emergency surgery, and most recently, an emergency toe amputation. And despite all that, he's still working full-time as a mechanic. Let's just say when Troy is working full-time, Grandpa Glenn has to be working overtime. Anyway, over 20 years later, those two stories still give me chills together. I hope everyone else enjoyed them as much as I have over the years. I'll try to trickle those other stories in over time. I think this is the longest one I have, so the rest should be less daunting for me to write up. Sorry for any typos. I wrote this up on my notes app while I'm in the bathtub. Now I'm all wrinkly, but it's done. Thanks for this wonderful podcast and community. I appreciate you guys. Creep it real. And maybe get a little scared of Ouija boards. Love, Rachel Stiltskin. P.S. My sister Megan, that's in this story, lived in Leakesville, Mississippi for 7 years or so. I always find myself wondering if she's crossed paths with you guys or if I've even crossed paths with you when I visited her. It's a small world.
You very well may have crossed paths with Colby, though, because he lived there for a long time.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's where... The camp that we had, that's where it was in Leakesville, on the Chickasaw River.
Chickasaw what?
Colby always tells every time we're going through Leakesville, he always says, you know how my dad learned how to spell Chickasaw? Because they, one time him and his grandpa, so his dad and his grandpa, when his dad was little, broke down on the bridge. And so to keep him entertained, he was like, by the time we get the truck working, you better know how to spell Chickasaw.
Okay. The fact that Grandpa Glenn... Like, he thought he had some strong powers. No, real strong. Like, he's still fucking up the Ouija board in death.
Grandpa Glenn and I have a lot in common. I, too, don't fuck with Ouija boards, Grandpa Glenn. Also, every time you call someone, like, Grandpa Glenn, do you immediately go to Willy Wonka and Grandpa Joe?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I didn't have a grandpa. Like, I had a papa and my dad's dad.
I had a pawpaw.
Yeah, I had a papa and then... We call my dad's dad, Daddy Perry, but I only met him once, so I ain't call him nothing but sperm donor.
I never met my dad's parents, and then my dad was called Peepaw.
Yeah, so I'd definitely go to Grandpa Joe every time.
Absolutely. But no, I really like those stories, and I can see why your sister like pulled over, because it's like, wait. Again, she didn't know this story, so... It wouldn't have made sense really to her before. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, Grandpa Glenn's his guardian angel. But now that you know, like he said that on those tapes too, that like we have enough power to stop the Ouija board. And then he like legit did.
Okay, the next one. Close calls. Hey ladies, I hope you're well. I've written in several times before and have always used my real name. But for today's story, I would prefer to remain anonymous. Please call me Wednesday. I'm going to talk about a situation I was in when I was a lot younger, my early teens. Y'all have talked a lot about being up to things on the early internet you shouldn't have been, and I was up to the same shit, trust me. I talked to all kinds of guys, I'm sure some of them predators, but I at least had the intelligence not to give any personal information, not even my real name. So with this background in mind, you can sort of get the mindset of 15-year-old me. I'd talked to and been sexualized by men for years at this point, and honestly, at the time, didn't see much of an issue with it. Now on to more specifics. Like I mentioned, at the time this story begins, I was 15 years old. I had a class with a new guy at our school and was always the type to chat with the new people to make them feel more comfortable. We became casual friends, enough to chat some outside of classes and exchange phone numbers. This was my sophomore year and also the year I started dating my now husband. I was very much not in the market for dating or flirting or anything of the sort. But this friend of mine, let's call him Seth, began slowly crossing the line, making comments about my appearance, mentioning that if I was single, he'd want to ask me out, doing the total incel thing of, I'd never be good enough for you, etc., etc. These comments and conversations did make me feel uncomfortable, but given the background I described and the setting/year this took place, I push it off as guys will be guys. He started asking more personal questions, frequently asking for the color of and description of the underwear I was wearing. The first time I laughed it off and said, like, black or whatever it was, thinking it was going to be part of some joke, and when he asked me for more details, I noped out. Following that time, I always declined to answer, and he would ask why. I'd explain I wouldn't want my boyfriend to be answering these questions of some girl, so I didn't feel comfy doing that with him. You have to understand, he would smush these things in between appearing to be genuinely a good friend, almost love bombing, but in the friendship way, gaslighting for sure. So at the time, I didn't see it as the snowball it was. There came a time where he confessed his love for me, which I kind of blew off, politely, but didn't stop being friends with him because that just happens sometimes, right? Some point after this, and honestly, this makes me cringe so much, he would ask if he could ever pleasure himself looking at my pictures on Facebook. I just remember being uncomfortable and saying something to the effect of, "I guess I don't have any control over you, but no thank you." Please don't judge me for not cutting off all contact at this point. Like I said, he was very good at peppering these things out, so it wasn't all at once. I was vulnerable, struggling with an eating disorder, depression, and a difficult time at home. So someone occasionally telling me I was beautiful made me feel nice. To clarify, my then boyfriend and now husband has never made me feel anything less than a goddess in his eyes, but as an insecure teen, hearing I was pretty from another person boosted my confidence as well. The friendship continued on into the next year. I had my driver's license, and every once in a while we would hang out, usually with other friends present. But one day, we were working on a one-on-one project together, and I had picked him up and brought him over to my house. My parents didn't care much once I could drive if I had friends come over, so my place was usually the place where my friends and I came. I have to do a quick description of my bedroom. It wasn't exactly small, more that it just had too much furniture for its size. I always had a queen-size bed that mostly just left a walkway around the room. My whole life, it was totally normal for me and my friends to hang out sitting on my bed as there was nowhere else to sit. So at this time, Seth and I were sitting in my room on my bed going over the project stuff. My mom was home, but indisposed. Seth was larger than me. I'm tall and was curvy, so not petite at the time. He was at least 4 inches taller and a lot larger. I started noticing him moving closer to me. My back was against the head of the bed, so there was nowhere to move. He was sitting on the edge next to me and was between me and the door. I was trying to tell myself I was being weird for no reason as my anxiety grew. And then he puts his hand on my thigh and begins to rub it up my inner thigh pretty firmly. I went into panic mode. I felt trapped. I can't remember exactly how. I think maybe I just said, "Seth, stop it." But I remember he held his hand there for a moment, looking at me in a sort of considering way, then finally moved his hand away. True to my avoidant nature, I don't remember talking about it afterwards, and I don't think I told anyone. But that was the point where I stopped allowing myself to be alone with him and stopped talking to him as much slowly. We aren't done though, ladies. The main sinister part is to come. Probably just a bit after this, maybe a few months, I get a random ad on, I honestly think it was MySpace. Back then, that wasn't odd, so I accepted it. It was a girl that started chatting to me, being very complimentary. Soon after, I got a text from Seth saying his old friend from back home's little sister was messaging him, and he didn't know how to help her, so he gave her my username and told her maybe I could help. The little sister was the girl that had added me. I didn't initially question this. I said, sure, I can help. She was younger than me. I was 16 or 17 at the time, and she was maybe 14. She was meeting people online and had asked general questions that a young teenage girl without a female role model would ask. I did my best to answer her questions and impress on her to be careful and safe. When she slowly asked me more in-depth questions about sexual things, I didn't honestly think much of it. She was old enough to ask questions, but then I noticed some of the things she would say or questions she would ask seemed like things Seth had said or would say. I started getting sus. I asked him more questions. Suddenly, he was talking to her romantically, and she came to visit him, etc., etc. Well, I'm sure y'all get where this is going. Although I have no concrete proof, I know the girl, Ashley, I think, was actually Seth catfishing me for his own sick pleasure. When I stopped talking to, quote, Ashley, she dropped off the face of the planet. I phased out talking to Seth quickly, trying to not make it stand out, but wanting to block him out ASAP. He did make one more final bid to get back in my life senior year. Knowing I was bi and outspoken in the LGBTQIA community, he came to me and told me he was trans. You notice I'm not using she, her pronouns. Please don't assume I'm invalidating a trans individual. Seth is a cisgendered male. He decided to take that angle to, again, ask questions of a personal nature under the guise of considering transitioning and integrating himself to me, the only person he could tell, and his only support. I'm generally a trusting person that is passionate about people being able to live their life to their fullest, truest selves. So unfortunately, I fell for it. Mentally writing off all the previous stuff to someone being confused and trying to figure things out. There's no big crescendo here. I just started getting uncomfortable again and stopped talking to him. I made connections between the stuff he had asked previously as himself and as Ashley. The underwear thing always came up. I've only seen his life from afar occasionally. I don't think he's changed much, but I will always walk the other way if I see him. For the longest time, I blamed myself for this. I told myself it was my fault and that I needed to not think about it and tell no one. But it wasn't my fault. I wasn't stupid. I was a victim. And I'm so thankful that day in my room, he seemed to decide it wasn't worth he had in mind for me with an adult in the house. And that I wise up enough every time to not let myself be fully taken advantage of. I feel icky and used from those experiences, and those feelings are valid, but it could have been so much worse. The main reason why I wanted to share this was because I know there are a lot of young people that listen to this podcast. In general, there is more support and awareness for things like this now, but I just needed to say, please, please, please be careful. If something feels weird, don't write it off. If someone makes you feel uncomfortable, tell them or walk away. If something seems off or fake AF, it probably is. And if you do end up in this type of situation and don't catch it right away, it's not your fault. Don't hide in shame. Tell someone you trust. Sorry for the length. I usually wouldn't say that because I love the long ones. Cue Donna laughing. But I don't know if this was as interesting, and it's very long on my computer. So I feel like it will be a long read. Stay safe and keep it creepy. Love, Wednesday. No, I totally identify with this story.
Absolutely.
Because there's been so many times that somebody shows you like the remote interest. Not you, me. I would put up with the most ridiculous things, and if it was happening to Donna or literally anybody else, I'd have been like, no, that's fucking ridiculous that they're doing that. But it was just getting, like, it gave me validation when I was so insecure that you just deal with it because you want that validation no matter how bad it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Also, I feel very much called out because I would give everyone my real name.
Same. I thought that too. Whenever I read that part, I'm like, oh, shit, I did.
I'm terrible. And like, I did stupid, stupid shit. But luckily, it all worked out how it worked out. But I definitely do not judge you at all for any of that. Because like you said, he was a gaslighter, a manipulator, and they know how to like weave that in so like gingerly that it's those ebbs and flows that you don't see, you know, like you don't see the valleys because you're at the peak and all of that.
Well, and it's like just enough to make you think like, maybe I'm overreacting. I'm overreacting, right? Like they didn't mean anything by it. That's just Bob or that's just Billy or whatever the fuck their name is, or Brenda even. I mean, it doesn't have to be a guy.
Right.
It could, you know, there could be manipulation from anybody. And you're like, oh, it's not that bad. But it's like all the little stuff that adds up that you're like, no, this is bad. This is them doing this to me. Like how you were saying.
The little sister and all
yes,
of that.
Yes, that's weird.
Yeah. Also, when you were saying that, Carrie, it reminded me of Taylor Swift. They say it's not about me, but what if it is?
Yeah.
Like, all the things. And it's like, but you really do think that. Like, okay, this person's world does not revolve around me, but what if it does? Like,
yeah.
It's all seeming like it does. Even though there's a lot of stuff out there and there's more places that people can talk to people about this and all of that, I still think this story is super important because there's some people who don't want to seek that from somewhere else, but like hearing someone who has the same interest as them and all of that, it's like, oh, no, wait, I do relate to this. And, you know, like, I think it's really important to always tell your story and your experiences. Because no matter what year it is, when people are going through puberty or anything, it's like we all have that insecurity. We all seek that validation. We all will put up with shit that we shouldn't put up with. And it's like, it doesn't matter. Even though, like, you know, the memes are like, people at 14 are this and me at 14 is this. And it's like completely different. We're still going through the same shit.
Mm-hmm. The hormones don't change because the year changes.
Right. Okay, the last one. The sinister sighting I thought I'd never share. Hey, ladies, I've already professed my love for you once, so we can skip that. Okay, can't skip all together because y'all are my fave. I've finished all the episodes, all the Patreon content, and I'm re-listening from the start because I just needed some freaky deaky Donna and Carrie in my life. Sorry, Carrie, I can't remember anything ridiculous that you've claimed to be called in the past.
Because I haven't.
I'm called out. That's what I am. Anyway, this go round, I'm feeling all mushy and in my feels about how we aren't your fans. We're family. With that being said, I've only shared this story with a few people. Not because it's scary or sinister, but because this experience is so very near and dear to my heart. And this family won't side-eye me for how much this experience means to me. When I was a freshman in high school, I had it bad for the Yee Jr. who drove a Bronco you could hear 2 miles away hauling ass and flying into the high school parking lot on two wheels with about 2 minutes to get into the school. Our first quote-unquote date involved getting stuck in the mud hole in the middle of nowhere in said Bronco, because what else is there to do in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky? He always wore DNA cologne. Had never heard of it before, never heard of anyone wearing it since. I know that smell and remember the bottle always in the cup holder of that Bronco. I was young and dumb and got bored and broke his heart. I was so cold towards him for absolutely no reason, and I still haven't forgiven myself for that. Months went by and we didn't speak, but my best friend stayed friends with him because he was an amazing person and friend, one of those people we don't deserve. I was sitting on her couch one night and I got the urge, an unexplainable feeling that basically was demanding me to make things right. I asked my friend for his number and immediately text him. Just some lame, "I'm sorry for the way I treated you, but I wanted to make things right." He texts back immediately telling me it was okay. We shared a few messages and threw the idea of maybe hanging out in one of the upcoming weekends. That weekend never came. On June 29th, 2008, he was killed in a car accident. I can't remember the exact details. I believe he swerved to miss a deer and hit a culvert. I remember getting the text from the same friend who gave me his number. "Did you hear about Jake?" I was at work. It was a Sunday, and it was a super busy restaurant on Sundays after church. I had not heard anything and didn't really have time to look more into it, so I just told her no and asked what happened. She said early that morning he was involved in an accident and he was gone. I have never felt devastation like I did in that moment. I had experienced family members dying, but not someone 2 years older than me, someone I had just talked to a few weeks ago with loose plans to hang out. I don't remember much about the next few days. I remember spending a lot of time just laying on my mom's bathroom floor, the same one the spooky glowing shadow went into from my first story, oddly enough, and I was just unable to pick myself up. I didn't understand, and I still don't. I remember no one knowing what to say to me. We weren't together. We had barely spoken at the time of his passing, so I'm sure a lot of people were a little confused about how hard it hit me. Because even I was confused. I remember going to his visitation. He was the only one at the funeral home, and the line was wrapped through the entire building, out the door, and into the parking lot. He touched so, so many lives. I remember the whispers. "She's his ex. Why is she so upset?" When it was our turn, I wasn't ready. I crumbled into his mom's arms. She just hugged me and told me how much I meant to him and how much he and their family loved me. We walked to his casket together, and I told her that wasn't him. It didn't even look like him. It wasn't right. It wasn't fair that all that was left was a body that didn't even look like him. Time went on, and my heart began to heal. But here's where my not-at-all-sinister sighting actually begins. One night, I was on my way home from doing whatever teenagers do. I was running late for my curfew. It was kind of rainy and drizzling out. I was flying down a back road, not wearing a seatbelt. I lost control of my vehicle when I took a curve entirely too fast. I remember letting go of the steering wheel and just closing my eyes as tight as I possibly could, knowing what was coming. With my eyes still closed, I smelled it, that DNA cologne. I opened my eyes and my car was stopped in the middle of the road, already past the curb. I didn't see him, I wish I did, but he was there. I put my seatbelt on, I slowed my ass down, and I got home safely. To this day, I will not even take my car out of park without my seatbelt on. There have been other times that I've smelled it, not incredibly often, but enough that I'll catch the slightest whiff and smile. It's been several years since I've smelled it, though, so maybe he was only with me to get me through my dumbest, most irresponsible years. I'd still like to think he's with me and checks in on me and my now mini from time to time. I still keep in touch with his mom on Facebook and we message each other from time to time. Wow, I did not mean for this to turn into an actual novel. Sorry about that. But this is the first time I've ever put it all together collectively. I went to his mom's Facebook in the midst of writing this just to look back at pictures that she shared of him. I've been to his gravesite once, but it's truly in the middle of nowhere down a gravel road that no part of me would ever be able to try to find again. To say my world stopped for just a split second when I read the inscription on his headstone would be an understatement. Love always, Aaron B.
I mean, not to say that I'm right, but you did give yourself a dumbass title. Or what word did she use?
Ridiculous. Yeah. Not dumbass. You dumbass.
Oh, God. That made me giggle.
I didn't do it. They did it.
No, no one did.
Uh-huh. People did.
No people. The only they is you and the mouse in your pocket, because ain't nobody said that shit but you. Freaky deaky
Donna. Oh, gosh. Well, wow, that you could smell his cologne.
Yes, and also that's such a like guy thing with their cologne, too, to put it in there. In the cup holder, because where's Colby's? Well, not in the cup holder because I move it, but it was there, and then I moved it because I want to put my shit there because I got 7 cups.
Oh, my God. She takes everything of his.
It's a cup holder. Get it out of the way. I've got 3 cups.
No, also his glasses holder. He was like, you put your glasses in my glasses holder.
But it's because it was in the thing. I did. The little flip-down sunglasses, he did put my sunglasses there.
I know, but no, this was yesterday.
Yeah, this is just like in the console. Well, it was open and I just laid them there.
And it's also because she has like 3 sunglasses.
You know what? Thank you, Gooder.
Like, she just takes over.
I'm just a lot.
And I want to find less.
This bitch.
But you know what? Even though y'all didn't get to hang out that time after, you know, like y'all had loosely made the plans, I'm glad that you had that closure of apologizing, of, you know, just anything. And also, I hope you don't feel bad because you were a freaking teenager.
Like, right. Absolutely. You know what I
mean? Like, you getting bored is so, like, you know what I mean? That's what happens. You know, like, you get annoyed, you get bored, whatever feelings are at, like, the all-time high, everything. So, like,
yeah, teenagers are the fucking worst, and at least you made amends with him for it.
Yes.
But I'm not gonna lie, I really thought this was gonna be a little bit of a Billy Madison situation with when he called to apologize and the guy took him off the list. Like, yeah. I didn't sure where this story was gonna go.
Yeah. I always reference that part at work.
But no, for real, on the real though, he completely understood, because any grown adult will know that teenager you isn't who you are now.
Right.
Because I'm certainly not. I mean,
thank God.
Yeah, teenager me was the fucking worst. I was an asshole. I was a brat. I was moody. I mean, so was everybody, but God, I was unmedicated. Brat, I was an asshole. What else can I
say? Let's just say unmedicated Carrie was a whole lot.
I honestly don't know why I have friends.
Well, we became family. That's why.
Yeah, you're stuck with me.
I've learned from my relationship with you of what I look for in guys. And I'm like, oh, that's why.
Is he? He's not quite mean enough to me. Is he Carrie before the Zoloft? Is that pre-Prozac Carrie? Is that pre-Zoloft Carrie? Or is that Effexor Carrie?
Oh, God. Carrie's in her medicated era.
Oh, real. And everybody breathes a sigh of relief.
But thank you all so much for sharing these stories, because these were very personal, as they always are. But
yes.
I agree that we're all family.
And it means so much that y'all share such personal stories, and that everyone listening is so receptive and respectful of each other, because whether you believe that someone's story may have happened or not, like, you still know that it's a human on the other side of that board that's typing the story out. And so you respect that. And so that's, I think, important.
Yeah.
So thank y'all so much for listening and sending in these stories. Keep them coming. aparanormalchicks@gmail.com. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.